Hello everyone, welcome back to the Relay Bitcoin podcast. Today with a very special guest, Imo, our CMO, Chief Meme Officer, no, Chief Marketing Officer, who's joining us today. We had a couple of other team members already here, and I think it's really nice from time to time not only to have these huge guests like Jeff Booth, Dan Hell, Natalie Brunel, and all these great Bitcoin people, but also really the plebs and the Relay team members in here, because I found that a lot of people are actually very interested who's working here, what we are doing actually, like how one could get a job maybe in the Bitcoin industry as well through Relay and stuff like that. So that's why I wanted to also talk to you, Imo. So thank you very much for taking the time. Maybe you can introduce yourself real quick for those who don't know you yet.
Sure. I'm Imo Babic. I'm the CMO at Relay for 18 months now. Time flies. I originally come from Slovakia, but I also lived in the UK for a very long time. And now I'm based in Vienna, and I go to Zurich once a month to meet with Julian.
That's very nice. And I also had to, like, you forced me to come to Vienna as well from time to time. No, it's really, really nice. I really like Vienna, and I'm glad to come over once or twice a week as well. It's great to spend some time together. And yeah, one question maybe a lot of people have is, what do you have against my picture here? Like, why don't you like my map picture? For those of you who are looking into, who are watching this on YouTube, the funny story behind it is, like, we started this doing the podcast not in the studio, in the professional studio, because it was super expensive. We brought it here to my kind of home studio, so I bought this mic that sometimes I managed to use properly and sometimes not, which you maybe you also noted that, but. So then at one point he said, what's this cheap fucking map behind me? So Imo said that to me in a
conversation. I didn't say cheap.
You said cheap. You said it looks like a cheap map.
Did I?
And so I was like, it's actually artwork that is worth a lot of money. But so this was basically the reason why I put out this tweet of asking, what should I hang behind me? And many, many very nice Bitcoin artists, super, like, very, very cool Bitcoin artists got in touch with me via DM or via post or whatever. Someone actually even sent a piece of art to our office. I still don't know who it is. I asked on Twitter and everything. I still don't know. Someone sent this very nice pop-up picture to our office. So we actually have it in our office now. Which is really nice, but then that basically kickstarted the process of me having something new here. So, and there's an artist that I will announce soon that is now working on a piece of art to hang behind me, which is more Bitcoin. I think that was the reason, right, Imo? You wanted to have something more Bitcoin-y behind me.
Yeah, I think if you do have a background for the podcast, it makes sense that it's something related to Relay or Bitcoin. I mean, this is also fine, like, you don't have to do it, but it's a good idea.
No, I think it's a very good idea, so I'm going to do it. So how did you get into marketing? You're basically working in marketing your whole life already, right? So why didn't you study physics or something else? Why was it marketing?
I actually originally studied maths quite at high level. And then I dropped out after the first semester because I didn't like it. I was basically very much the odd one out. Most of my sort of course mates and classmates were super geeky, and I was going to parties, so I felt like maybe I don't belong here. And also, this was in Slovakia, and there you have to study for 5 years. You can't really split it. You weren't able to split it back then between bachelor's and master's. You had to do the 5 years. And I just couldn't picture doing 5 years of maths all the time. So I dropped out, and then I moved to the UK when I was 19. And I went to uni. There was more of a generalist course. So there was like business management. And I enjoyed marketing the most out of everything. And I thought it was very easy and very straightforward. And then from there, I just applied for a lot of jobs in agencies in London, I got a job working for Xbox as a client, and it kind of started there. So I have been in a media agencies for I think the first 4 or 5 years of my career. Then I worked in the movie business a little bit. I worked for 2.5 years for Universal Pictures, where I was basically planning the media and marketing budgets for movies like The Fast and Furious 6 and Despicable Me, which was really cool. Working in a film business is very good, but it's also it's an industry full of extroverts. Everybody's an extrovert. I'm a little bit more of an introverted person, so again, I felt like I don't really belong to this industry.
The other extreme, from the math geeks to the movie, movie stars.
Yeah, and then I also met my wife, and we sort of got serious together, and then we decided to move abroad, and we picked Vienna. I continued working in marketing in Vienna as well, and then I came across. I wanted to sort of start working in startups. I really wanted to stop working for big companies because that's all I've been doing. You know, all these agencies and Universal Pictures, they have hundreds and hundreds of people in the building. And you're just part of a small sort of huge machine. You're a small part of a huge machine. Then I wanted to experience startups. So I started applying for jobs, and then I came across Bitpanda. At the time, they were a very unknown company if you were outside of the crypto world. Mm. And at that time, this was 2017, it wasn't as big as it is now. It was still very much, very niche. You didn't really hear of people talking about cryptocurrencies at all in 2017. Now it's a totally different world. But anyways, I started looking into it. That's how I properly looked into Bitcoin. And then it started really there. I worked there for 2 years. I was the first head of marketing. And after that, I took a little break, and then I discovered Relay, or Relay discovered me through a headhunter.
Yeah, some headhunter discovered both of us and thought it was a good match. So I'm very glad this guy did it. So especially as a marketing person, I mean, you're a head of marketing even.
Hey everyone, this is Anna from Relay. I want to tell you about Relay Private. It's our exclusive service for private clients, family offices, and small or medium-sized companies looking to buy or sell large amounts of Bitcoin. As a Relay Private client, you have a full team focusing on your needs. A dedicated account manager guides you every step of the way. You also get personalized 24/7 support and gain access to exclusive reports and industry insights created by Relay. If that sounds like something you or somebody you know should check out, click the link in the description or head over to relay.app/private.
You have a lot of responsibility to sell the product, obviously, and a lot of pressure maybe also for, you know, delivering growth. How important is it for you to really have a passion for the product that you're selling? Because I feel like you did a great job so far in your career to almost pick something that you're passionate about. And then, and then sell this. So, for example, you really like movies. So you worked for Universal for these movies. You also worked for obviously crypto because you liked crypto and now Bitcoin more. And now you're obviously, this was one of your reasons why you wanted to join Relay, is because you were passionate about the product, you liked the product, and most of all because we're Bitcoin only. And I feel like it must be super important, especially when you're kind of, your full-time job is to sell a product, that you really are behind the product and are passionate about the product, or could you basically sell anything?
I think you can sell anything. So if you work at agencies, you work with 4 or 5 clients at the same time. That can range from a car company to a gaming company to sunglasses or supermarket chain. So you sort of have to plan the strategies based on the target audience. The target audience data is available because you work with research companies, and sort of you put one and one together. But I think, and there are people who like this. There are people who work in agencies their whole life. They really are, you know, lifetime agency employees, and they probably during their career work with hundreds and hundreds of brands of different industries. I didn't really like that much. I actually always wanted to sort of have a focused attention on one thing rather than several things, because you could also do a better job. Like, you could do a good enough job across any brand you want. It's marketing is not rocket science. But if you really want to do a good job, then it's better to focus on something. And also on a personal level, you get more invested in the brand or the product that you're working with if it's just one thing, and even more if you actually work for the company. Because I think the job is not just about the results, it's sort of where you spend your time. You work, let's say, 8 hours every day, 5 times a week. That's the minimum. Sometimes you work longer. So that's a huge chunk of your life, for, 40 years. So you might as well spend this time with something you actually care about. And if you don't care about it, if you work in an agency with a bunch of brands, it's all very transactional. It's like, the client said to do this. All right, we're going to find a solution to this problem. When I'm done with it, I hand it over. And that's it. My day stops. I don't need to worry about it. And it's great, but it's very on the surface. And I think you get a much more enjoyment out of your work if it's actually a little bit deeper than just the surface, if you are connected to it. And that's what I discovered. That's what works for me. It doesn't work for everyone else. Everybody is different. But when I was at Bitpanda, I truly cared for the company. I liked the people. I liked the culture. And I believed in what they were building at the time. But I also changed during the time as well, as the company did. And now I care really only about Bitcoin. So I wanted to find a Bitcoin-only company. And that's when just really Relay just popped up out of nowhere. So it was a great match. But the fact that I also am using Relay in my private life, and the fact that I am involved in a product, helps me to sell it better for sure, but also work with the product team and tell them that, hey, this actually would really help marketing if you do this. Or if we put more emphasis on branding, we would be able to get better results. And it's important that whether it's marketing or sales or whoever is in charge of the product is actually involved with the product. Because most marketers, what they're good at, I believe, is that they have a sixth sense for what people like and don't like. Mm-hmm. It's something that not everybody has. I think I have it, and I can really empathize with the people. So I can understand what would make them tick, what wouldn't. What is something that they would find appealing, what they wouldn't. And it's important to bring this point of view to a product team, to the engineers, to the developers, and to show them that it's great, you can do the job this way and it does the job, but if you paint it red, then it's going to do the job, but it will also be popular. Mm-hmm. So it's these little things that are important. And then obviously with growth, it is important for you to know the product, how it works, how people use it, how they behave, why they would recommend it. So I think the answer is complex. Yes, you can sell anything, but it's better if you really spend time with the product. It's kind of like, if you know something really well, you can sell it better than something that you not really are using. If you're not using a car all the time, you can't really know what it feels like to drive this car. Mm. You can't really know what's so great about driving this car. Mm. And that's, I think that's quite important.
Yeah, I think it's really this combination of working on something you're really passionate about, and also having ownership and really fully focus on that in this company. So if you work on a topic that is close to your heart, but at the same time you're working in a huge corporation where you're just another number, or you're working in an agency where you work with another client every week, you never really get this ownership. You never get this commitment. You're never as motivated as if you work for a small SME or small startup on this topic every day with a small group of people and really tight-knit. This is really where the magic, I think, is coming from. Because we, in our team, we have, and this is also a change that you drove a lot in, is like insourcing rather than outsourcing a lot of things. Like before you came in, we worked with agencies on the marketing side, on the software development side, on even the legal side. Everywhere we just worked with agencies outsourcing a lot of stuff. But that really only works to a certain point. And you basically also brought this in, which I really found found an amazing change is that we work mostly in-house on people. For example, you then also brought in our brand designer. We got rid of the branding agency, and since then our branding really just exploded. The quality is so much better now. We get so much more reach, many more, like way better feedback on it. And this, for example, this person that you brought in there, she was not a Bitcoiner and still not like a very deep Bitcoiner, right? But she took ownership. She really likes to work in this team, and she took a lot of ownership on the topic. Like, I want to make the branding of this company better. And she did. And so if you have, and then we have, I think, people who are really sophisticated and really interested in Bitcoin, maybe not that much into in which company they would work for Bitcoin, but they just want to work for Bitcoin. This is already great if you have one of these two, but if you can bring these two together, that's really when like you can succeed, I think.
Yeah, I've heard this somewhere that it really depends on the size of the company and the stage of the company that you're at. And then it's always the question between mercenaries and missionaries. And we are a small team and we do need people who are passionate about the company or about what we're trying to achieve. We're very lucky that probably 95% of our employees are passionate for the company, but also for Bitcoin. Mm. And these are missionaries. These are people who really believe in something. Because of that, they can go the extra mile. They can, you know, maybe accept a salary that isn't as big as at a big corporation. And then you have mercenaries who can be absolutely brilliant. You know, some of the best people work at agencies. They're really, really good, but they would really struggle at a startup that doesn't have big budgets, that doesn't have a team of many, many people, that doesn't, you know, have yet a perfect product. Like these, the startups are startups. They are really on the beginning of their journey. And agencies, especially the really big ones, the best ones that hire the best people and spend the most on salaries for hiring the best people, they are great for Coca-Cola, for McDonald's, where you need to sort of always reinvent the product, because that's also a big problem. If you have a brand that's been around for 100 years, how do you keep making it relevant? Mm. And that's important and that's difficult as well. But for startups, that might be quite a challenge. And also, as I said, it comes with its challenges and you need people who are really passionate. If you're not passionate, then I think personally, you probably would struggle at a startup. You would get frustrated and then eventually probably leave or get fired because it's not a good fit. Mm. You have to want it. It's not a job where you'd be like, I can just cruise and I can do this for years, because A, you will probably will be very frustrated, and B, if you just cruise, you will probably get fired very fast as well. Yeah. Because there's no space for people who just cruise, you know, who sort of just go with the flow and try to hide. You need to take ownership. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's quite important to have people who are missionaries. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably everyone at Relay. Even Anna, that you mentioned, our designer, she wasn't a Bitcoiner. I think she is now a Bitcoiner, but mainly she believes in a company. That's great. You don't have to be a Bitcoiner if you believe that what this company does and what these people do, I want to be part of it because they have a great energy and I believe that they will be successful, and therefore I will be successful if I stick with them, and I can also learn a lot. So yeah, it's always a debate, but I think at our size, I don't see a lot of value in agencies currently.
Yeah, definitely. No, I really like how you talk about this this passion thing and the missionaries thing. It reminded me of this. Maybe I can check. Can I share my screen here? Let me check. Can you see this?
Yeah.
Nice. So it reminded me of the Ikigai model. Do you know the Ikigai model?
Yeah.
Being in the Ikigai means doing something you love, something the world needs, something you can actually pay for, and something that where you're good at, right? And most people, like probably 90+% of the people never make it to their ikigai. They either have like a corporate job that is well paid, but it's not something that they love, or maybe, you know, it's something maybe that the world needs, but it's not really something they're good at. And so in the end, to really find something where you have the perfect match, or it's something that you're really passionate about and you feel like you're changing the world to the better, that's really like your purpose, and you like to get up every morning to do this, and also you're good at it, and it's actually something, you know, that also makes others people's lives better, and you can get a salary from it. This is already a lot to ask, and it's pretty hard to find something pretty unique if you found something. For me, back then, this was really also a big struggle. For me, this was always, I had a huge drive to find something like this. I didn't just want to have a job. Like, I hated to work at a bank. I worked at a bank with great people, and I was probably okay at it. I was good at it, but like I just hated it because I felt like I'm not gonna do anything positive for the world. And I saw the people that were there still working for 30, 40 years. You know, they were close to their retirement, and they were so they were dead inside. Like, it's great, like, because they were not passionate at all about it. They came to the office at 9, they left it at 5. Any call, any email after 5, they wouldn't look at it because they hated what they did. So for me, this was always super important to find something. And when I discovered Bitcoin and decided I wanted to make Bitcoin a big part of my professional life, this is when it clicked for me, I think. This is really something. It was so interdisciplinary. It was so world-changing, like so fundamentally disrupting how we think about finance. That I thought there's almost nothing that can have such a big impact on the world like Bitcoin. And I also thought that this is definitely something the world needs, because, you know, the financial system as we know it now, fiat based central bank and government and bank driven, there's a big problem. So it's an alternative to this, is something the world needs. And I found a way through the company Relay that I can also get paid for it, and, you know, and I thought it was it doesn't matter, but like this was when it clicked for me. And I think everyone should find this kind of click moment, and a lot of people do actually when they discover Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I also feel like more people should try to find their way into the Bitcoin crypto or like the Bitcoin ecosystem to get a job. It's now easier than it was for you when you started working at Bitpanda. So let's start on how was the interview process at Bitpanda? Was it hard to get to? Because it was your first step into the industry, and back then, as you mentioned before, the industry was really tiny yet. So how was the interview process, and how was kind of the journey from A to Z that you're... You're 2.5 years at Bitpanda?
I was there for 2 years, but at the time it was a very different company. So now, obviously, they are Austria's first unicorn, a huge company with, I think, 400 people working for them or something like that. So obviously, probably now they have several rounds of interviews and all sorts of things. But at the time, I had one call with the HR person, and then one in-person meeting interview with the HR person, and at the time the head of design, who was kind of filling in for marketing because they didn't have a marketing person, and then another final round, which was basically with one of the founders, and that was it. It literally took, I think, 2 weeks altogether, three interviews altogether, including a phone one, and then that was it. But now, and when I worked there, then actually I introduced for the marketing positions that there would also be some sort of a task that people would need to do. So then it becomes more complex, and now for sure it's more complex. And but they're recruiting all the time, so, you know, it's easy to get a job, as you said, now in a Bitcoin company, because there's, in every country, I would say, there is probably at least one local business that is a broker or an exchange, or you have these big ones like Bitpanda that covers several countries, and they're always looking for so many people. So if you want to work in a Bitcoin only business, then that might be a little bit more challenging. There aren't that many, and the ones that are existing, at least in Europe, are quite small. The small startups that probably don't have the budget to hire, you know, more than one person for marketing, more than one or two developers and stuff like that. So these are, I would say, because Bitcoin is so niche compared to the larger crypto world, that might be a bit of a challenge. But for sure, it is a lot easier than it was in 2017.
So when you joined Bitpanda, what was the, you told me, I think, in the interview process that like it was phenomenal growth that you guys achieved there, especially the period you were there. I mean, you're also a marketing guy, so you are good in convincing also about yourself and like the, telling the right numbers to people. So, but I was super convinced when you told me about the numbers that you achieved there. For example, you came there as you were one of the first marketing people, and then when you left 2 years later, you were more than 20. So you recruited a lot, you built the team, you've grown the team, and then you've scored like probably, I think, 1 million app downloads. So when you got there, it was like 200K app downloads, right about the stage that we are at now at Relay. But when you left 2 years later, it was more than a million, right? And all these kind of crazy numbers, how did you achieve this kind of growth?
So at the time when I started there, I think I was employee number 35 or something like that. There wasn't that many people, and most of them were devs. They had lots of developers, obviously. They didn't have app downloads at the time yet because there was no mobile app. The mobile app came probably a year into me working there. So late 2018 or early 2019 is when the mobile apps were released. Now they have, you know, now if you discover Bitpanda, you think that it's always been the case, but it was a web app for most of the time. They had around 350,000 users at the time already when I joined. I'm not going to say how many of them were active, but then when I was leaving, I think we were celebrating, soon afterwards that I left, they were celebrating 2 million users or something like that. So it was a big growth. To be honest, like, I would love to take the credit for all of it, but marketing for sure did a great job. I had a very good team. Some of them I brought with me to Relay, like Rafael. But marketing wasn't all of it. It was also being at the right time with the right product, because essentially, you know, you had this big bull market in 2017 that has really sort of put crypto and Bitcoin on the map for most people. The general public really, really learned about it in 2018, 2017. And from there on out, then you had again another bull market. I think since then there were like two big ones. And then the 2019 one, I think, really helped. And that, like, it's sort of, if you get lucky enough as a business to be at the right point, when new technology is being adopted, then it's very difficult for you to not to grow in such a big way. So what we really did, I mean, obviously we were spending money on advertising, sponsorships and influencers as well, but referral program was a huge deal for Bitpanda as well, just like it is for us. And what we also did a lot was content marketing. Education, it seems to be something that is always a problem in this space. It hasn't really changed that much, actually, since 2017, because education has been a big problem then, and it is still now. Most people, I've read several surveys, even from 2021, 2022, where people say that the biggest barrier for their entry is the lack of education or the lack of knowledge. So people just don't know about this. Companies, I believe, especially Bitcoin companies, I think don't do a good enough job of trying to dumb it down. Like, we talk, you know, we talk about proof of work, we talk about all these sort of technical terms and wallet and blockchain. This is all big words that are very scary. And we don't explain the very simple why should you care about this. So I think the educational part was a big deal for Bitpanda as well. We actually, one of the bigger things that I'm proud of that we launched there was the Bitpanda Academy, which is a huge educational e-learning platform that is still active now, and they've done an amazing job on it since then as well. And that was a big part for us. And then all various partnerships, PR has been a big deal as well. So really growing the app has always been of several channels and several tricks. There is not one silver bullet for it. But I would say if you take all the marketing away, everything else, then the things that have to and probably contributed the most to it was the timing and the product. They, because of the number of devs and they had, and even now, they always put a big emphasis in on a product. And I think that's what makes a company successful. If they actually want to spend money on the product and they focus on it as well. And that's I think what works for us right now as well. We you know, took some learning, but we have discovered that it does pay off to put all our effort into it. You know, that's why we are doing all the work that we're working on that we can't talk about it here, but there will be lots of updates coming out for the product this year. And because I think that marketing is important, but having a great product always trumps having good marketing. Mm-hmm. You can have a great product and an okay marketing and you will be successful. You can have great marketing and a shitty product and you will be successful for a very short time. Mm-hmm. Because when people try it out, they'll feel like they've been lied to. So it's, you will get the people through the door, but they will not retain them. Mm-hmm. So marketing and product has to be hand in hand. They ideally should both be really good. Then that's when you have success. That's when you can really grow. Mm-hmm. And I think Bitpanda had that and probably still has it. And Relay has it as well, or we're working on it really. So it's you cannot have good marketing without a good product, in my opinion. I had worked at a fintech before very briefly, that the product was not good at all. It was very, very faulty. And it's almost impossible to market it because you have immediate bad feedback from the users. Like literally the moment you put a campaign live, people go, they click on it, they read about it, they download the app, they try the app, and immediately they give you 0 stars or a 1-star review because they hate it. Mm-hmm. Because they feel like you have given me this beautiful message, this greatly designed, nicely written message, and I got convinced. I took my time to register, to download, to register, and then you let me down with this shitty service. So it's never really great if you have a shitty product.
It's a very fine line though. It's hard as a, what's the hard thing about being a startup is that you have a lack of resources, right? You have very limited resources, so you can't just possibly have all of it. You don't have enough, time, you don't have the manpower, you don't have the money. So you can't really get just this within half a year, you get this perfect product out and you can market it with a great team and then you just go, right? Because you always have to find a great balance, a good balance between the product, the marketing or like the growth and the finances. And in order to raise money as a startup, you need to have a great growth. You need to show growth. So you need to kind of pressure this growth to a product that is maybe not there yet, but you need to find the money to build the product, right? So it's always about building the product, getting growth, and then through the growth, getting money, and then with this money, build a better product, and just you go this cycle all the time. And that's why sometimes you have to you have to be good at marketing, even if it's a mediocre product, to get more resources to improve the product, and then you can reach the next level of marketing and growth as well. And that's sometimes kind of tricky. Obviously, I would love to invest all the money into product for a year, but the problem is then we would run out of money, and without any really great growth, we could then not go out get more money. So you always have to balance these things out.
Yeah, it's with startups though, you have some time because people are more forgiving if it's a startup that doesn't really have a big name yet. I worked at a company that had a very big bank attached to it that comes with very big expectations. And then that's not a relationship you want to enter, and it's like, oh, this is big bank, great, let me try it. And then you realize that the product is really poor. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, if you're a startup and people don't really know you, they are more open to imperfections. And what they, I think, what they're more looking for is that, oh, this is exactly what my problem is. It solves it. So I will give it a try. And then this is, for example, where having a great support team really helps, because people run into problems. And the difference between a big company and a startup is that at a big company, you probably get a random message and then they reply to you 3-4 days later with something that is not going to satisfy you. At a startup, they might not always solve your problem, but they will always feel like, I just had a conversation with a human being, and you know, they really tried to be helpful. Mm-hmm. So yes, you know, you will probably run into a problem at a startup, but then you will kind of forget them. Unless it's something that, you know, there's of course, you know, big mistakes can happen at startups as well, and then it's a whole different story. But in most cases, people are very open to mistakes and imperfections, because they know that they're working on it. Mm. I love this product. I really like what they do, and it will be so good when they fix it all. And I'm looking forward to it, and I will be on this journey.
Mm. Yeah, it's really crazy the community support you get. I mean, probably not every startup, but we as Relay really like have such a great community supporting us all the time. Like from the beginning, people were basically spending time with us, giving us feedback, testing the product, telling others about it. This is something you would never get as a corporation. Maybe you have a 10, 20, 100 million marketing budget per year, but you never get this kind of dynamic with your users, your first users, your followers so online, your supporters, because you also put this energy in. Like all the few people that are working at a startup at an early stage, really because they're missionaries, they don't care about the salary, they just want to work with these other ambitious people on the same vision of, like in our case, bringing some Bitcoin into everyone's pocket worldwide. Like they spread so much energy that this is contagious, and all these kind of followers online and users, they want to support us, and that's such a great energy. That is, you know, you cannot compare it with anything else, and that's also why so many startups succeed against their big corporation kind of incumbents. David versus Goliath story. That's very nice. So you at Bitpanda, you helped them, or you joined them on their growth story, and you helped them get this growth story done, but you left them prematurely, kind of. I mean, you left them before they were a unicorn, I think, or just when they became a unicorn, maybe. But now they have, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 billion valuation. So they, and I think actually they have had at one point around 1,000 employees. Now they had a layoff, maybe it's less. But like they grew massively even after you left. And because you also kind of knew the market cycles, there's up and downs, there's bull markets, and there's crypto winters, you also probably anticipated that, okay, it's now a crypto winter, and a lot of small companies will die, but the big ones will make it, and Bitpanda was one of them. So those who make it in the next bull run, they grow even more. Like with every bull run, this we could observe with Binance, Coinbase, Kraken, and Bitpanda, the ones who were early and always survived all the crypto winters, they were growing massively in bull markets. So why did you leave? Why didn't you wait for the next bull run when Bitcoin hit 60K? I mean, this must have been another crazy time at Bitpanda. Why did you want to leave?
The company went from, as I said, like from 30-some employees to 250 when I was leaving. So it's a huge growth, and the whole culture changes a lot. So I really loved the culture when I joined. Everybody was, you know, it was very similar to what we have now at Relay. But then when you go through such a massive, really rapid growth, everything changes. New people come in, people from different backgrounds, and overall it takes a toll on people who stay on this journey as well. And it was, you know, one feature after the next. It was a super busy, really hyper growth 2 years that I spent there. So essentially I was kind of, I didn't know it at then, but I know it now, that I was burnt out, and I basically lost the passion for the company. I was frustrated with the founders, with the way the company is being run, and everything. The easiest way to say it is that I fell out of love with Bitpanda. Mm-hmm. And then essentially I just decided that I don't want to continue sort of this relationship anymore. So we went our separate ways, just like it happens in relationships where you grow apart with your partner and then you realize that this wasn't actually good for me after a while. But then you look back and you can be grateful for the good times. Like I really, really, I am sometimes critical of Bitpanda on social media, but I do wish them the best. And I am a fan of what they're trying to do. Sort of as a, as an Austrian company, you know, that started so small and now it's so big. So I wish them well, but I also wouldn't go back there. So it's like, you know, it's exactly like with human relationships. It's like that phase of my life is done. And it's great to see you from distance doing well, and it's okay. I don't need to call back again, and I don't feel any regret. So that's kind of how it works with companies as well. Mm. And it has been very great for my career as well to have, you know, Bitpanda success on my CV. It definitely opened lots of doors, and I interviewed at some crazy companies because of it, and I rejected all of them because they all felt like the repetition of Bitpanda. It feels like, why would I step from one bad relationship to another one straight away? So I decided to do something completely else, took a break from the whole fintech for like a year. And then it allowed me to really think about what is it that I liked about it, what is it that I didn't like, and what would I like to do again? And that's how it sort of arrived at the point where I really like Bitcoin, and I like what it stands for, and I mainly like the energy that the Bitcoin industry has. And I wrongly attached it to the crypto industry, you know, like it's the big factor is this whole idea that you are part of an industry that is going to change the world, much like the internet did and the early internet companies, you know, in early 90s or mid 90s. That's what it feels like. And I missed that completely because I was a child. But now I feel like this is very similar to it from all the books and all the stories you hear about from that time. This feels like, yes, this is something similar. And it's quite an, I would say, like an intoxicating feeling to be part of it, because you feel like, oh, this is so great. And we are, that's how you become a missionary. You really fall in love with, we are actually changing the world. So I realized that that's what I want to do. So I only wanted to work for Bitcoin companies. I have interviewed at some NFT projects that actually became the biggest NFT exchange in the world. I didn't know at the time. And I didn't know what NFTs were. I just knew that it was crypto. And I'm like, this is not going to work. What is this? Mm. But I rejected all of them because in the end, I realized that that's not what I want to do. And I wanted to work in Bitcoin, but it is quite difficult to get a job in a Bitcoin company. And I still wasn't in a phase where I started looking for a Bitcoin company. I just made up my mind that I only want to work in Bitcoin. And then basically out of nowhere, this recruiter contacted me that there is this crypto company that just got funding and they're looking for a CMO. And I get these requests very often, like literally every other week there is some sort of a crypto project that is looking for a CMO. It's quite nice how we can track the sentiment of the market based on how many LinkedIn messages I get. So usually I reject them with a thank you that I'm not interested, and I wanted to do it the same way, but then I was curious and I asked them like, what is this I need to know what the company is before I answer yes or no. And that's when he said it's Relay. And I looked into Relay, and that's sort of as it started. I forgot to say what sort of pushed me over the edge is that I did take a break from fintech, but then I returned to fintech working for a bank, which was this project I mentioned. And that was the thing that really pushed me over to the Bitcoin side, because working in a bank with bankers, with the giant institution that a bank can be, was probably the most frustrating 6 months of my career. It was really mind-numbingly bad. So I essentially, you know, just decided I will never want to work in a bank ever again. And then Bitcoin came, and now I can't imagine working for a bank because, you know, it doesn't correlate very well.
That's so interesting to hear. And so now you're working full-time at the Bitcoin company, and for many out there listening, this might be kind of the dream. But how is it for you? I can only speak for me, but how is it for you to be like, this is your full-time job, but it's also your hobby, right? So in the evening, on the weekends, sometimes you're also on Bitcoin Twitter, and you're reading a lot about this almost 24/7. Obviously you have a family, you have a private life, but like, it's also your hobby. Does it get too much sometimes, or is it like, is it exactly what you want to only deal with kind of one topic? Is this sometimes hard for you?
It isn't hard, and I think it really depends on what it is, because I mentioned, for example, that I worked at a movie studio. I really, really wanted to work in the film business pretty much all my adult life. And when I got to work there, I realized that that it's like, if you get to like peek behind the curtain, and then you realize that, oh, this is actually not as nice as I thought it would be. The whole industry is very different to what I thought it is from the outside once I was inside. And if somebody would have told me, for example, when I was in high school, when I was leaving high school at like 18 years of age, and they would have told me that I would be into finance, I would be like, absolutely no. And here I am working essentially what is finance, or the future of finance. And I am very passionate about it, but it was an evolution of me sort of getting to this point in my life where I'm really interested in it. And now that I work in it as well, it doesn't feel like, you know, I'm overindulging over a topic, or that I'm too focused on one thing, because I do care about it. If anything, it's important that I try not to speak about it all the time, because then I just become the guy who always talks about Bitcoin, which I don't want to be. Like, I don't want to bore people if they're not ready to hear the message. If somebody asks me, then yes, I answer them, and I'll give them all the information that I have to the best of my knowledge, but I don't want to be the person walking around, I work in Bitcoin, do you want to hear about Bitcoin? But I think it's great. I think it's important for people to realize that it's still a job. You still need to be good at it, because you can be passionate about Bitcoin and they will take you only so far, but you also need to be able to bring some value with your passion. So you do need to be good at something. So I would really focus on that you find what it is that you are good at and work on it over and over and over again, because if you're really good at something, then the companies you like and the industry you like will hire you for you being good at it, which can be you're the best support person in the world, or, you know, in your country, or you're very good at marketing, or you're a great finance person, you're great at memes. Doesn't matter what it is, you need to first of all know what you're good at, and then you will get a job that you will enjoy. Just being interested in Bitcoin, you might find it hard, because there's a job to be done as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always also better to just do something you like and go for it as long as you can and as hard as you can, and don't think about the money at all. It's way better to than just going out looking for a job that pays you a lot of money, because in the end, you know, you will reach a certain point where you're so good at something that people will throw money at you to do it. So they will give you more and more money, but it's a journey. It takes a bit of time, obviously, to get there, but it's definitely worth it. So last question, as usual, you know what comes now. How much Bitcoin do you have as a percentage of your portfolio? Are you an all-in guy?
I probably have more than the average person.
Most likely.
I think the last time I checked it was around 75% or so. Wow. So a high percentage, and I'm trying to work on it now to balance it out, so to lower it, basically.
It's going
to
be hard in the bull market. You'll need to sell a lot.
I don't need to sell. I just need to put money elsewhere. Okay. I'm never selling, so I don't know. I have lots of friends who ask me of like when I would sell, and I don't know, never. So I haven't thought about it yet, even when it was at the last all-time high, so... Yeah,
I really like this question though. When people ask, "When will you at which price you sell?" and I found the best answer is a counter question. and it's for what for? What would you sell it for?
Yeah.
Then that's where the thinking process starts. Like, okay, is fiat money actually the most valuable thing I can store my wealth in? You know, because this is just something that people take as given. So they buy some asset, stocks or real estate or Bitcoin, and then they want the money, the value to go up. So they speculate on the price rising, and then they sell it again. So they have cash, which in their minds is where to store the value. But this question, they actually never ask themselves this question. What do you sell it for? If it's fiat money that is debasing at a rapid rate currently and is, you know, controlled by governments, central banks, and there's fees involved and censorship involved, all that kind of stuff, then they start thinking about, okay, maybe I want to store it, actually store the value, not only speculate with Bitcoin, but store my value in Bitcoin in the long run. And then it doesn't make sense to sell again. This is a very long journey that a lot of people still need to go through. 90% of the people in the world, actually. That's why we are here for. We're helping them. So thank you very much, Imo, for taking the time. This was a great chat. Is there anything you wanted to add?
No, only to, you know, stack sats with Relay. If you haven't yet.
Great job, Imo. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for the chat.
Cheers, guys.